thanks for the introduction. And let me talk about work typecasting verification stopping an emerging attack vector. My name is Byung-Young Lee, and this is a joint work with Cheng Yu-Song and two of my advisors, Tae-Soo Kim and Winky Lee. So this is the vulnerability trends over years in from Microsoft products, and you can find some of the interesting patterns. First of all, the number of Stack Overflows, it is decreasing. So you know, this Stack Overflow is pretty classical vulnerability, and many of the security researchers have tried to identify the Stack Overflows, and we know there is a lot of the runtime protection techniques to stop the Stack Overflows. So we believe that is the reason why this classical vulnerability, number of this classical vulnerability has been decreasing. But you can see another pattern is this yellow bar, the use after free, and it is ever increasing. And so we tried to stop this use after free vulnerabilities in our previous work, NGSS, in the NGSS. And in this work, we are going to focus on another emerging attack vector, which is called bad casting, or also called, type confusions. So before I get into the details of the bad casting, let me talk about the two different type castings in C++. So this is static casting or dynamic casting. So static casting is essentially compile type convergence, and it is fast because there is no extra verifications in runtime. But because the static casting only carries out this compile time verifications, it has no information on the actually allocated types in runtime. But on the other hand, dynamic casting is essentially a runtime type convergence, runtime convergence, and it requires the runtime type information, which is called RTTI. And then based on this RTTI, it is doing the extra verifications in runtime. So it is in the runtime, based on this instrumented RTTI information, it is following it through and then get the precise type verification. So because it is going through this complicated verification process, it has to be pretty slow. So because this is pretty slow, this dynamic casting is typically prohibited in performance critical applications like popular browsers like Chromium or Firefox. And depending on the direction, depending on how the casting is directed, so there is two different castings, up casting or down casting. I think you may heard about this from the C++ classes. So up casting is that the casting from a derived class to its parent class. And down casting is the on the other way around. So you cast it from a parent class to one of its derived class. So for example, you can see there's three different classes, and here element is the parent class, and this, the other two classes are the child class, and which is the specific implementation of the general implementation of element. And you can see the, if you go up of this class hierarchy, then we say this is upcasting. And if you go down, then we say it is downcasting. But here, when we are really doing this typecasting operations, the rule of thumb is that upcasting is always safe in terms of the memory safety or in terms of the language specification. But the problem is downcasting is not always safe. So let me get into details of why downcasting can be unsafe. So to understand this, let's consider these two different simple classes that I come up with. And the left one is the class P, which is the parent class. And the right one is the derived class D, which is the derived from the parent class P. So for both of these classes, it has the virtual destructors, meaning that both of these are polymorphic classes, and both of them will have the virtual function table pointer inside of the offset. And each of them has its own dedicated integer member variable, m underscore p and m underscore d. So let's see how each of these classes will be represented in the memory. So first of all, for the parent class p, the first slot of the parent class p will be filled up with the virtual function table pointer. Again, because this is polymorphic class, so it has to know some way to resolve its own virtual members. And the second one, it has its own dedicated member, integer m underscore p. But if you look at the derived class d, then the first slot is again filled up with its own virtual function table. pointer, virtual function table pointer for itself. And the second one, because this is derived from the parent class P, so it is inheriting DM underscore P from the parent class. And after that, it has its own member variable M underscore D. So now we understand how this memory is represented in the memory. But so finally, let's see how the static casting is made and then how the downcasting can be actually bad casting. So here in this costume path, you can see the class is allocated, the memory is allocated into a class P, and then we try to downcast it into the derived class. But the problem is that this is actually bad casting because this to be casted class D is not really a sub-object of P. So in the C++ standard, this is called undefined behavior, meaning that the compiler cannot guarantee the correctness of the program after this point. And more critically, what's going to happen is that this can also involve the memory corruption problem. And if you try to dereference this bad casted pointer, and then there can be the memory corruption. So for example, let's go back to the same class memory layout for the class P. And if you try to dereference this P, D, arrow M underscore D, then if you try to access to this data member, then it is actually trying to access something which is not really allocated by yourself. So what's going to happen? This is the memory corruption, so you can override something. And this is like this can be related to the classical attacks. So like a lot of the memory corruption attacks, you can override the control flow data, especially in C++. You override the virtual function pointers, and you can similarly do the pretty much the same attack here. Then do the launch the arbitrary code execution attacks. But to actually understand how this bad casting really happens in the practice, we took the example from one of the bad casting vulnerability from Chrome, and which is also used in Pantone contest in 2013. So this is the related cluster hierarchies involving this bad casting. And the first, the class was allocated into the HTML unknown element. And after that, it is upcasted to the element, which is the generic implementation of the HTML unknown element. And then after that, it was trying to do the downcasting into the SVG element. So it is going back to the specific implementation. So why is this problem? Because this HTML size of the HTML node element is only 96 bytes, but downcasted class, it has way bigger size, 160 bytes. So what I'm trying to say is that once you get downcasted this, and once you have this SVG element pointer, then you have the extra visibility of the memory, like 64 bytes. So using this 64 bytes, the attacker can override the memory, which is not really allocated or which is dedicated to someone else. So what you can do is that you can still override the virtual function pointers or something like that to hijack the control flow, or you can override some data in the memory. And then more importantly, if you look at the complete picture of the cluster hierarchy involving this problem, and you can see it is pretty, pretty complicated. So you can see this HTML unknown element had the 57 different sibling classes. And because of this very complex cluster hierarchies, it would be very, very hard for developers to have very, very good understandings on when they are doing the casting operation. That means the casting operation can be pretty error-prone. So we are not really first to talk about this bad casting problem. There was the existing solution, but each of them had challenges. So the basic approach of this existing solution is to replace static casting into dynamic casting. But because the way dynamic casting works, it has some problems when it is handling the non-polymorphic classes. So I will get into later, but let me talk about the good cases. I mean, when the dynamic casting is handling the polymorphic classes. So with the RTTI. So dynamic casting actually works on the pointer or reference. And given the pointer, if you try to see the first slot of the polymorphic class, then again, most likely that is virtual function table pointer. And then if you follow up this structure, then you will end up with the class name. And so based on this class string name, you can actually use it for the type verification. So this is something the existing solution was doing. But the problem happens when it is trying to handle the non-polymorphic class. So if the dynamic casting is applied to the non-polymorphic class, what's going to happen is that we don't really have assumption here now that the first slot is virtual function table pointer. It can be any arbitrary data member type, which is defined by the developer itself. And if we are trying to traverse this variable, then it can lead to the runtime crash. And this is something related to the C++ problem. I mean, so like C++ supports no reliable method to resolve whether a pointer points to polymorphic or non-polymorphic classes. And because of these problems, because this can lead to the runtime crashes, previous solutions, including undefined behavior sanitizer, relies on the blacklisting, meaning that based on the trial and error process, you try to identify these sort of the non-polymorphic classes. I mean, then after that, you opt out to apply your solution onto these cases. So to overcome this sort of the limitation, we come up with the CAVR, which we call CAVR, which is short for cast verifier. And this is a bad casting detection tool. So we have two design goals. First, we try to come up with the easy to deploy tool so that it is not really relying on the blacklisting so that we can easily apply it to the commodity software like Chromium or Firefox. And we want to have the reasonable runtime performances so that it can have the better use cases in the future. And this is the CAVR's overview. So first of all, it takes the source code. Yes, so this is the CAVR is relying on the source code level. And then during the compilation phase, we first emit the TH table, which is the type hierarchy table holding all the class relationship information. And after that, we also do the instrumentation, which follows up the type information in runtime. And after that, during the link phase, we added up the CAVR runtime. And then finally, we generate the secured executable. So here's the technical goal of CAVR. So you can see first, we allocate the class. And here, so the P is the allocated class. And we are trying to cast it into class D. So what's going to happen is that we are given this pointer. And then this pointer is pointing to in some object. And in runtime, you don't really know what kind of object, what kind of class that PTR points to. So to actually identify this bad casting, CAVR has to answer following two questions. The first question we have is that what are the class relationships between P and D? And we answer this question using our new type hierarchy table we call TH table. And based on TH table, the CAVR can understand the whole class relationships. The next question we have is that what kind of is pointer points to P or Q? In general, what it means is that given the pointer in runtime, what kind of object or what kind of class it is pointing to. So we come up with the new runtime tracing technique so that it doesn't really have the problems from the non-polymorphic classes, but we can generally handle both of these two cases. So first of all, type hierarchy table. So TH table is a setup, includes a set of all legitimate classes to be converted. And here, the class names are hashed for fast comparison, and hierarchies are unrolled to avoid the recursive traversal. So what I mean by here is that you can see two different classes. So again, the D was the derived class of P. And then you can see, because P should be able to cast itself, so P includes himself. For the D, because the parent class is P, so P, D includes the D and P. And the other point is that instead of storing the string itself, we always store the hashed string so that we can avoid the expensive string comparison operations. Second, we try to unload this sort of delay out linearly so that the decaver can simply enumerate them over and then try to understand what were the cost relationships for certain corresponding costs. And after that, we also do the runtime type tracing. So in this runtime tracing, for this runtime type tracing, we instrumented the extra function called trace. What this trace function is doing is that once the object is all located, then you will see, again, the pointer is pointing to some object. So what we are doing is that this trace function first creates the metadata, and this metadata is pointing to the TH table. And we maintain the hidden internal mapping from object to metadata. And so depending on the allocation scheme, we have used different data structures. And mostly because mostly for come up with the lock-free data structures under multi-threaded environments. So for the heap object, we are using alignment-based direct mapping. And for stack and global object, we are using per-thread or per-process red-black trees. And the important feature here that we want to emphasize is that this is decoupling the metadata from the object. And please remember that from the dynamic casting or RTTI-based tools, they were actually putting the metadata inside of the object. In fact, they are not really putting the metadata, but the virtual function table pointer itself was already inside the object. So once you try to make some assumptions on there, then they end up with the crash. But because we completely decoupled and separate this metadata out, so we don't have such crash problems. So finally, we do the verification. So given this, so the question here is that given this static casting onto the class D, then how do we do the complete verification? So again, thanks to the TH table and thanks to the runtime type tracing, we will have this memory layout. And so what this verification is doing is that simply going over this data structure and to see whether this casting is valid or not. So first, what we do is that given the pointer, we try to locate the metadata associated with the object. And after that, we locate the associated TH table. And finally, we enumerate the TH table and check if this destination class or to-be-casted class D exists in the table. And in this example, because TH table P does not really include the class D, then we can determine that this is a bad casting. So we also do the several optimizations for caver. So first one is that we did the selective object tracing. And because not all objects are involved in downcasting, we try to statically identify such objects and skip tracing them. And we also try to reuse the verification result. And because the verification process has to be always the same for same classes, so we try to cache this result to be reused in the future. And we have implemented a caver based on the LLVM compiler suite, and we have added more than 3,000 lines of C++ code. And currently, we support the Linux x86 64-bit, and caver can be activated with one extra compiler flag. And in the evaluation, we try to answer following three questions. First question, how much efforts are required to deploy caver? Second, how effective is caver in detecting bad casting? Third, what is the overall runtime overhead of caver? First of all, deployment efforts. And we tried to build the Chromium and Firefox browsers using the caver. And to do that, we changed the build configuration files of each of these projects. And we changed the 21 and 10 lines of the build configuration, mostly for switching the compiler default compiler GCC into LLVM compiler, LLVM or Clang. And during this phase, we have used no blacklist. And after that, we found that caver was successfully built both browsers, and it was able to run both browsers without runtime crashes. And this is one of the running example of caver. So you can see once bad casting is detected, caver generates this sort of the report. And you can see first, it is showing the detailed casting information. So from the how it is all located first, and second is the pointer information, and third, it is the destination or to be casted class type. And this is showing the runtime code stack so that the developer, so once he identifies the bad casting, they will have better understandings on what's really going on in this bad casting. And Caver found new vulnerabilities. So during the evaluation, the Caver discovered 11 new vulnerabilities, 2 cases in Firefox, and we earned the bug bounty awards from them, and 9 cases in GNU libstandard C++. And all of these vulnerabilities have been reported to the vendors and fixed by vendors as well. And here is the runtime overhead. So right now, the Caver has the Caver's runtime overheads are completely depending on the application characteristics. And on average, on Chromium, we have 7.6% overhead. And on Firefox, we have 64.6% overheads. And you may wonder, what are the applications of the Caver? And then, so like, you can easily imagine that this can be used as a backend bug detection tool. And we already have shown that it was able to find 11 different vulnerabilities in bad casting. So in the enterprise setting, using some backend server, if the Caver is running, then hopefully it can find more bugs in the future. But if you're trying to post it as a runtime mitigation tool, let's forget about the performance overhead, but we are really posing as a mitigation tool, then this has some interesting research directions, I think. So because just think about a lot of the previous mitigation techniques we are really thinking about. And this is many of these mitigation techniques are focusing on the certain attack methods. So think about the CFI or ROP prevention techniques. So it is relying on some certain assumptions on how the attacker created the exploits. So CFI, assuming that given the memory corruption vulnerability, they are overriding the control flow data. And ROP attack, so they given the control flow hijacking vulnerability, or given the control flow hijack capability, they are chaining the different gadgets. But it is always possible that the attacker comes up with a different attack method, and that's why we are seeing a lot of the different research papers talking about how the CFI can be broken or how the CFI it has some limitations in the implementation. And also, more importantly, it is known that these researchers were talking about the control data attacks, meaning that it is hijacking the control flow. But once the attackers switch it into the non-control data attack, meaning that using some sandbox flag or something, then these mitigation techniques will not be that effective as before. But here, we want to emphasize that Caver tackles the root cause of the bad casting. So instead of focusing on how the exploit or how the attack is made, but we are focusing on the root cause so that's why the Caver is agnostic to a certain exploitation method. So here's the conclusion. We proposed the Caver, a new runtime bad casting tool. And Caver was able to discover 11 new bad casting vulnerabilities in Firefox and libstandard C++. And we have very, very short demo. So here, what I'm going to do is that I'm going to run the Chromium browser. And this Chromium browser is the vulnerable version that we have mentioned about that exploit, that vulnerability, CVE-2013-something. And then what I'm going to do is that I'm going to run the browser and then do very, very simple stuff and then try to visit the exploitation page. And I will show you what's going to happen. So let me run the browser. And I hope the internet... Yes, so this is the Chromium browser, which is hardened by the Caver. So it is already instrumented version. So although it looks pretty transparent, you can see actually in the backend, it is tracing a lot of the object allocation and verifying a lot of the static casting. Maybe I can search for something here. And you can see there is no false repose, but it is doing something cracked that I want to do. And if I try to visit the exploitation site, I hope I remember. It seems the internet. Thank you very much. Oh, there you go. Oh, sorry. This is my homepage. I mean, this is not really the browser is slow. This is mostly because the network is slow, I would say. This is, trust me, this is not about it. I mean, if I do the local, let me just do the quick cheating. Yes. You can see it's not really slow. Yeah, I prepared it here too. This is still loading. Okay. So if I just run this exploit in the local file, then I'll show you what's going to happen. So this is the console, and then there will be the error reports once I visit this. Once I visit, then there is error report, as I've shown you before. So cast verify this caver detected the bad casting, and it is showing the detailed information how the casting is made, and then it is showing the this runtime call stack information. Although this is not symbolized, but you can use the offline tools to symbolize it. So thank you very much. This is the end of the presentation.
Hi, I'm Alessandro Di Federico from UCSB. So, but since you have your, let's say, the descriptor of the type, it's not in line in the object, what happens if I main copy the object from one position to another? Basically, I lose the mapping between the object type and the...
So the question is, how do we map the TH table with the object?
No, usually when you do, like in the usual RTTI, you have the type in line, right, in the object. So if you mem copy it somewhere else, you still have that information.
Yes.
But if you keep a global mapping outline from the object, then you lose this relationship, right?
That's a very good question. But we haven't really seen, I think we need to check the details, but this is a C++ class object, and I don't think you can do the memory copy, right?
Well, I think you can mem copy any memory area.
Yeah, so like
if you could do it, you could instrument the mem copy, but that's hard.
Yeah, so we can handle that problem as well. If we instrument the memory copy as an extra, we can do some manual work with this, some domain knowledge. So this is C++ class, and I think I need to think it through, but I don't think you can do the memory copy on you cannot really copy the object like that, right? There has to be copy constructor or something.
I think that if you do a size of an object, you actually know its object, its size, so you can just main copy it. But maybe we can discuss this later.
Yes.
Thank you. Hi, Patrick Hewlin, MIT Lincoln Laboratory. What's the advantage of this system over using something where you say, replace all of the polymorphic static casts with dynamic casts, and then just put an assertion afterwards? Like, what's the advantage of your system over that?
So if you simply try to replace all of the static casting into dynamic casting, we haven't really mentioned the details about it. So easy hurdle is that you need to enable RTTI, right?
Sure.
And so that maybe that is easy challenge. And the next challenge is that the fundamental challenge here is that, let's say you're given the pointer, and so for some of the dynamic casting, so some of the static casting is purely designed for or used for the non-polymorphic classes, right? But if you once you switch it into dynamic casting, then what's going to happen? So it is assuming that once you switch it into dynamic casting, you have to assume that the pointer which you are trying to cast is pointing to the polymorphic class, and you're also making the assumption that there is virtual function table pointer.
Sure, but shouldn't you be able to tell statically whether there's a virtual function table pointer in a class, so you can only replace those dynamic casts?
I don't think there is another research direction, but I don't think you can easily do that. Okay. So like, there is this complicated class hierarchy, and think about it. So the base class is the non-polymorphic class, and then after that, you have the polymorphic class. Then some of the point, you have the generic pointer, which is the non-polymorphic, still you have some non-polymorphic pointer, and based on that, if you're trying to dynamic cast into the polymorphic class,
okay, thanks.
Then yes.
Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.